Hi, this is Brian and Scott from Weezer, and you're listening to our second episode of our On the Pulse podcast series.
On the Pulse.
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 So, Brian.
Yes, Scott.
We just got home, from tour, and that was our month around the U.S. in the most humid weather we've probably ever been in.
I finally feel like I'm home. We've been home for 4 days, but it hasn't really sunk in because we immediately jumped into recording a video the very next day, and that felt like I was still on tour.
How did you feel finally getting this video for We Were All on Drugs underway?
Well, first of all, we went straight off the tour and went right into making a video, which is very bizarre. And it was really taxing on our bodies to do that. In this video, we've never labored so much over pre-making a video. The song's called We're All on Drugs, and it's been a problem because of the word drugs, because we don't want to have to make a statement pro or against drugs. It's not even about that, but of course, you know, MTV, I guess, won't play this video unless it's an anti-drug song, so our anti-drug video. And I don't think we wanted to do that, but I think we made a good compromise and did a very ambivalent take on what this song's about. And it's entertaining, and that's what a video should be. And
who's the director?
Justin Francis.
That's right.
It was a very good experience making the video, except pretty high stress. It was very complex. It was the most complex video we have ever done. It was a 2-day shoot in lots of different scenes and character actors. And in fact, the band's not even in the video till the very end on the second day, and we arrived at 4 p.m. and weren't needed until 12:30.
Yeah, I didn't even go into makeup till like
a.m.
Yeah,
and
makeup.
As soon as we started, the cops showed up and pulled, and we're going to pull the plug. And we hadn't even taken a shot yet, so our record label president Jordan Schur was there and was able to bribe. I don't know how he did it. The cops into two let us take two takes. So that's all we have, and I guess that was enough. And the premises were soaking wet because we were in a house that was burning down.
No, we're next to the house that's burning down, but the firemen are hosing down the wrong house. You have to see the video.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the video. But it's going to be cool.
They really put Rivers through the ringer and had him.
Rivers is the lead character.
Yeah, had him really going through a lot of situations.
Proctocologist, protagonist.
They're going to cut in performance shots of us doing the song with him with us, and it doesn't really make sense till the end. So that's part of the punchline.
The Beverly Hills video was like a total opposite experience in that we kind of left it up to our record label and to our management to pick what they thought would be the best treatment and the best director. And we didn't really say, I don't remember us saying that much about it. Do you?
I remember saying something about it. Yeah.
Well, we were saying like, is this a good idea or not? But ultimately
I remember thinking it wasn't a good idea at all, but, we were pressured in the time. We had no time to think about it. And, they had like 2 days to throw it together, and it was very much just thrown together. And at least we worked with this director before, so we had chemistry with him.
With Marco Siega,
Marco Siega, yeah. And it was just a fun day. And the video's not really trying to say too much. It actually got nominated for Best Rock Video.
Yeah, we're going to be at the VMAs.
Which is...
that works?
That's rad.
Which is cool, you know?
We'll be in South Beach, Miami.
Really? Cool.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to play on it. They're trying to get us on it, but I think it's already booked.
I think, Scott, you're going to be presenting with one of the Playmates.
Oh, right. Yeah. I did not hear that, but thanks for letting me know.
No, that was cool. And we got to meet Hugh Hefner, and the mansion itself is pretty interesting.
Yeah. What was your favorite part about doing Beverly Hills?
The peacocks.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Dude's got like a mini zoo there. That's kind of neat.
Yeah. Actually, I think that my favorite part was being with our fans in a strange environment. It was kind of neat, you know, because we hadn't been in that environment with fans around us in a long time, and it kind of felt like, hey, you know, you guys like us, and we like playing for you, and we're glad that you still like us, and isn't this fun?
What's your favorite acts that you're playing now in the show?
Well, I'm mostly playing a Les Paul. I think it's a standard. It's a basically a Jimmy Page ripoff of Cherry Sunburst, and he was one of my most influential guitarists as a kid. And I think my first two albums I bought in the same day were Combat Rock, The Clash, and Led Zeppelin IV.
Right on.
So
it's weird. Like, the older that I got, the more I was influenced by a lot of guitar players and their vibe. Like Jimi Hendrix, like the way that he could get sounds out of like one note or two notes.
I also really love the Cream live album.
Oh yeah, it's amazing stuff. I think that Strat that you play.
Yeah, that is totally a Jimi Hendrix ripoff. I could go into how I got that, but and that's it's not
you,
really not that
you
interesting.
You played at the end of Beverly Hills for that last solo out thing, right?
Well, as you know, we're in two different tunings through most of the set.
Yeah,
and usually it's an E flat or D sharp. Which means that we tune all six strings a half step lower than standard. And that's something Jimi Hendrix did. It's also something that Nirvana did. It not only is easier to sing in those keys, it also is makes the strings looser, less taut, so its bending's easier.
Right.
It's a deeper, darker sound.
You think it sounds heavier?
It sounds heavier. But personally, I think guitars sound best in standard tuning.
Oh.
I like when a guitar's chime, and that's why I play that stuff at home.
Have you always had those particular guitars for all the records you guys have done, or
no? These are recent. Most of the earlier Weezer records, I used a Gibson Melody Maker, a very inexpensive guitar, shaped like an SG, very lightweight. I changed the pickups out. For some reason, I was using a wound G string. I think I might have read that that's what Hendrix did or something.
Right.
Or that's what the guys in the 60s did. And it definitely gave the guitar, I don't know, it kind of had a different feel with a wound G-string.
So what song, like old Weezer song, do you think you can hear the evidence of that the most on? That's kind of like a signature. Because to me, like when I listen to those records, there's a certain like Brian Bell sound or kind of twanginess or like,
it's
your vibe that nobody else could play.
Well,
that
would
I
be
know.
A Telecaster, I think. I have to, when I think back about that guitar, I don't think that really stands out sonically where you can like pick it out so well, but it definitely has that dark, crunchy sound.
Right.
But I think that might be more of the amps we were using.
What kind of stuff were you using like on Pinkerton?
Well, that's when a lot of my guitars got stolen around this time, and I was really bummed out. And River said, why don't you go get a guitar that you've always wanted? And I thought, that's a great advice. I'll do that. And I always wanted a Telecaster.
Right.
And
is that when you got your thin line?
This is when I got my thin line.
That's a nice guitar.
And that is a thin line is a Telecaster with an F hole. And I didn't know that they were called a thin line. I didn't even know that Telecasters had F holes. And I saw this guitar and like, not only do I like guitars with F holes, but it's a Telecaster with an F hole.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be the first year this guitar was made in 1967. I think it was $3,000 in like 1995.
Right, so now it's worth like what? Like 10?
No, I bought it at a very expensive store. It's probably worth about $4,000 to $5,000, I would say.
Especially if you,
And later I find out that this guitar, that was the Curtis Mayfield guitar.
Right on.
It just has an It's a twangy. I started getting a little bit bummed out by the dark quality of the guitars in the Weezer recordings that we needed. We needed something to counter that.
Yeah, you know, and all this the super thick layers of guitars and stuff. That's your stuff always cuts right through all that, which is really cool.
But for the first album, we weren't even using our own guitars. We were using Rick Ocasek's, you know, 1950 juniors and, you know, P90s. And
what about on bass? Was Matt using his bass and stuff too, or was he using Rick's?
Gosh. I think Matt had a P bass, a decent P bass.
That's a cool sound of record.
Yeah. but you know, presently, since you've been in the band, what do you think the differences of recording Maladroit and Make Believe were?
Jeez, Maladroit was like a total free-for-all where, like, it was my goal to somehow, like, play everything that I had ever learned, like, on one record. It was like my first record. So I'm like, I'm going to show everybody how rad I am. I'm going to show how much, you know, how much I can shred. And nobody was there to say, you know what, that's a little much, or you're kind of distracting from the vocals a little bit.
It was self-produced.
Yeah, it was totally self-produced. Nobody said anything. Rivers is like, wow, dude, that's rad. You're really shredding. I'm like, yeah, cool. And I like went and played even more. So then, you know, and that record sounds like that, which is rad because I like listening to that kind of music too. But then Make Believe, you know, the first demos that I played on that went to Rick Rubin, like it was always came back. His comments were, bass is too busy, bass is too busy, bass is too busy, bass is too busy, to the point where I got super frustrated. You know what I mean? And I had to totally reevaluate my whole mission as a bass player in this band, you know? But I think that once I got out of the way and I started really paying attention to the songs more and like listening to where Rivers was singing and where the guitar melodies and stuff were, I knew what to do, you know? And it was really, I learned a lot from Rick Rubin in that way.